Brace the rudders! Raise the sails! Raise the sails!
Captain, an unidentified ship is approaching. Over.
Roger. Wait, is that an Enterprise sales solution?
Reach sales professionals, not professional sailors. With LinkedIn ads, you can target the right people by industry, job title, and more. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next campaign. Get started today at linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply.
With a Venmo debit card, you can Venmo more than just your friends. You can use your balance in so many ways. You can Venmo everything. Need gas? You can Venmo this. How about snacks? You can Venmo that. Your favorite band's merch? You can Venmo this. Or their next show? You can Venmo that. Visit Venmo.me/debit to learn more.
You can Venmo this, or you can Venmo that. You can Venmo this, or you can Venmo that.
The Venmo MasterCard is issued by the Bancorp Bank N.A. pursuant to license by MasterCard International Incorporated. Card may be used everywhere MasterCard is accepted. Venmo purchase restrictions apply.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Tech Entrepreneur on a Mission podcast. My name is Ton Dobbe, and I'm the founder of Value Inspiration and the author of The Remarkable Effect. I envision a world where every B2B SaaS startup succeeds because they're creating software that customers would miss if they were gone. And here's why. Research consistently shows that 90% of all startups fail, and that's bad. What's worse, however, is that 75% of SaaS scale-ups fail, companies that are supposed to have product market fit. Far too few scale-ups create the traction they aspire for and fail for the wrong reasons. And I believe this should stop, and hence I created my business. And the goal that I have with this podcast is twofold. First, to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential that we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. Secondly, share experiences from tech entrepreneurs like you about what it requires to create a remarkable software business and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so. The guest on my podcast this week is Wes Busch, product-led growth pioneer, founder of productled.com, and best-selling author.
They were actually thinking about product-led growth, not just as like, it's a product thing. They were treating it as a company thing. They actually built a product-led business. They didn't just slap on like a product-led growth motion. And the kind of question that provoked the book was like, you know, what separates the companies that really see success with product-led growth versus the ones that don't?
This is Wes. He's widely recognized as one of the pioneers of the product-led growth movement, challenging an entire industry to rethink their approach to SaaS growth. In 2016, he introduced a freemium product at Vidyard that gained well over 100,000 users in less than 12 months, sparking his passion for PLG. He's a best-selling author. His book, Product-Led Growth, How to Build a Product That Sells Itself, has sold over 100,000 copies globally, primarily through word of mouth. Meanwhile, he has partnered with well over 400 SaaS companies to generate over $1 billion in self-serve revenue. Based on that experience, he wrote another book, The Product-Led Growth Playbook, to discover a simple system to scale your SaaS from 7 to 8 or even 9 figures in self-serve revenue with a small team. His vision? For every company to have a free product experience that enables them to serve before they sell. And this inspired me. And hence I invited Wes to my podcast. We explore the critical differences between successful and unsuccessful PLG implementations. He highlights the importance of treating PLG as a comprehensive business strategy, not merely as a product or marketing tactic. We discuss the importance of choosing the right go-to-market strategy based on product complexity and value addition, i.e. when to opt for sales-led growth and when for product-led growth. And last but not least, he shares his framework for deciding what to offer at no cost. And by listening to this podcast, you will learn four things. Firstly, what questions to ask to determine which approach fits your SaaS company better. Secondly, what's required to be crystal clear about before implementing PLG. Thirdly, why he believes hybrid PLG plus sales-led growth will become the dominant go-to-market motion with 60% of B2B SaaS companies, while pure PLG and pure sales-led growth will be around 20%. And lastly, what we can learn from PLG when it comes to building better websites. Well, hi, Wes. Thank you for making the time available today and being the guest on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Well, I mean, the moment you reached out, I was like, okay, you don't need to introduce yourself. It's a yes. because I've been following you for a year. I mean, funny enough, I looked it up. I think I bought your book back in 2019.
It's nice. It's got some highlights in it, so that's good to see. A
couple of highlights in it as well. Yeah, exactly. At the end, I specialize more towards the sales-led SaaS motion. And so I'm loving, the opportunity to have a conversation about, okay, so how did these things go about? Where do they match? Where do they don't match? And what do people need to kind of look for? How do you make decisions on that level? Because I get these questions all the time. So let's get going. Before we start talking about, the whole product-led SaaS motion and the books that you've been writing, a little bit about you. What drives you? What gives you energy?
Yeah, I think it all comes down to, I was reading this book way back called The Unique Ability by Dan Sullivan. And it kind of talks about like, what are some of those things that like you're not predestined to do? Like you still have to develop these skills, but like things you really do enjoy. So what gives me a lot of energy is trying to spot trends and patterns. And so that's one thing I feel like I, over the years, have really got to hone in on. Like, okay, when I help a lot of like hundreds of these SaaS companies, I start to identify some trends or patterns where I'm like, yeah, like that's happening quite a bit. And then I go in this kind of like little laboratory working with them in a client capacity. And I'm like, hey, let's try this. This is a theory. And so it's putting the theory into practice. And then once it works or it doesn't work, I kind of take it back and be like, okay, could we simplify this? Could we make it better? And so it's that learning cycle that's actually very fun for me. Like it's like, okay, I think I'm onto something, and then I try it, and then we learn very quickly, and then we just make it simpler, simpler, simpler. And so I feel like I'm always trying to just make things simple and understand the world a bit better. And I actually write the books to understand concepts a lot better to a whole nother degree. And so there was this other guy named Daniel Priestley. He's an awesome author, prolific too, but he had this one quote where he's like, you know what, the whole process of writing a book, it should definitely be valuable all on its own. Even if you sold zero copies, you would have to say, without a doubt, this has been one of the most valuable things in my life. And like, I feel like I live that every day. So that's what gives me energy.
We're so alike, you know? I mean, I wrote my book, The Remarkable Effect, in 2020. And just that process, getting your train of thoughts sharp and clear. Totally. And these days I write a daily email. I'd actually write a daily LinkedIn post and a daily email these days.
That's awesome.
And it's so clarifying. So I completely agree.
Is it the same thing in both of those? Or
no.
No. Wow. That's commitment right there. Like that,
it's
that's
commitment.
A lot
but
of work.
It's, I mean, there's, the moment you get into that mood or in that mindset, you just start seeing so many things that are related. And yeah, I mean, you never run out of topics in the first place. But I think what you say there the most is clarity, simplifying things.
Like when you're creating, for me, that's the genius zone where it's like, okay, I'm at the highest point of my purpose.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, connecting that back then to you're betting and doubling down on product-led growth. You wrote your first book in 2019. You just finished and launched another book. First one is product-led growth. Now it's product-led growth playbook. But to point on what you said earlier, the trend, was this related to the trend that you saw earlier on? Or so what inspired you to write the book? And like, what was the problem that you saw that was screaming for you, so to say?
No, definitely. So the first book I wrote about 5 years ago, just Product-Led Growth, How to Build a Product That Sells Itself. And so in that book, what I was just trying to unpack is, what is it? And understand it to like a whole nother degree. And so that, I feel like it did it pretty well. It also helped a lot of people understand, like, is this right for you or not? Like, you should have a pretty good idea if product-led growth is right for you by the end of that book. You're either going to love it or you hate it. And so you're like, that was the goal. But then when we started helping hundreds of companies after that book came out, we started to notice there's a trend of a lot of companies would implement product-led growth, do everything in that book too. And then they still wouldn't see that much success with product-led growth. And so I was like, interesting. Now, why is that? And so about 2 years ago, we had like at that time, 324 plus clients. And so I started going through every single one of them and went to their websites, talked to their founders if I could, and asked, like, what's your self-serve revenue? Did you see success with that model? And at that time, most of our clients were like these senior product executives. And then we had about 20% of them were these SaaS founders. And so what was shocking was 80% of the results came from the SaaS founders versus, like, you know, 20% was from the 80% of the product execs. So I was like scratching my head, kind of wondering, like, well, what the heck? Like, what's going on here? What are they doing differently? And so then that I just started diving deeper, especially on the, like, the product podcast. I just started doing deep dives on the founders and, like, really trying to understand, like, what are you doing outside of that? And what came out of that was there was these five other things that were really, really important that they were doing differently. And they were actually thinking about product-led growth, not just as, like, it's a product thing. They were treating it as a company thing. They actually built a product-led business. They didn't just slap on, like, a product-led growth motion. And so I was like, oh, this is, like, way more than I thought it would be. And the kind of question that provoked the book was, like, you know, what separates the companies that really see success with product-led growth versus the ones that don't? And the book answered that. And it also kind of broke it down into a simple step-by-step playbook that people could actually follow to see the same results. And so that's where I'm getting a little obsessive, is, like, you know, the conversion rate from, like, learning about PLG to actually seeing success with PLG. I'm always just trying to tweak that and make it a lot higher.
So well said. See exactly the same. It's yeah, you can do certain things. You can start with the foundational things, but if you don't follow through in the whole business, it will never become a success.
Totally.
That's so important. And yeah, I mean, we'll dive into the five things and how it's done differently. I also want to talk a little bit about the phases that you were actually describing in your latest book. But to bring the two worlds together, I mean, my world is a sales-led SaaS business. Your world is the PLG motion. From your experience, what are there certain type of products or markets where PLG is particularly effective, where maybe in other sales-led is more effective? Do you see some clear distinctions?
Oh, totally. And, like, I'll give you a story with a client that we were just talking a bit about this, and many people will resonate with this, where it's like, so I was talking with VMware and they were going through and trying to decide, like, where does PLG make sense? They have tons of products. And so one of their, like, kind of skeptical salesperson had a really good point. He was like, you know what, Wes, we have this product here that's really, like, think about it like an analogy. It's like the heart of a business. Like, if this thing goes down, businesses are, like, literally shutting down. They're losing, like, hundreds of millions of dollars. It's really complicated stuff. And you see, whenever we make this complex sale, it's not just usually one product. It's a combination of some of our products. And we're actually providing a ton of value to help them understand, how do we solve that complex problem you have? And so I was like, fantastic. Keep sales in that specific area, because what you're solving is extremely valuable. And, like, my kind of, like, pinnacle question I always ask when it comes to, like, should you have sales in this part of the process or not, is it just comes down to something as simple as, like, is this salesperson adding value or just friction to the process? Now, I'll give you an example where this would not make sense. And everybody would probably agree. Let's say it's a $10 per month plan. And it's like, hey, the only way you could sign up for this is if you talk to us and we go through this whole process. Now, in that case, you might think, oh, that's, like, really a lot of friction. Do we have to do that? It's like, yeah, that is. But if it's, like, beta testing and you're just launching a product, yes, that still makes sense. So it's like, there's all of these pieces of advice that the hardest thing, like, on going through this, I'm sure you are well aware of too, is there's so many things that are stage specific where it's like, at this stage, it does make sense. When you're above 10 million, maybe you think of combining the best of sales led with the best of product led. But what I believe is, like, from one to usually 10 mil, not always exact, but you should pick one go-to-market motion and really nail it, because trying to nail, like, two or three of them, it's crazy. And it's really hard to actually make that work. And so usually, if I was just wrap this up, when you're thinking of, like, sales led versus product led, which one might make the most sense? Usually if you're solving for a lot of complexity and you're adding a lot of value in that sales process, That's usually where it's like, yes, please keep sales. They're adding a ton of value there. But if it gets more transactional to just like, hey, here's fill out this order form and we'll go through there. And it's more commoditized and standardized and you're solving for it, just, hey, this is the simplest way to do this product. Usually that's more inclined to product led.
Well said. Yeah. I mean, I see a lot in that part of, okay, it's the heart of the business. And that doesn't mean that product led growth products aren't valuable, because they are. Mm-hmm. But it is to the point, if it goes down, the business comes to a halt. And I think that is by default in that area. The other part is, well, I mean, I had to laugh like when sales is adding value or actually friction. But I mean, I also see the opposite of that in, on the sales led side, where some people are just a nuance.
Yeah.
And don't add value where they should and are friction. Yeah. I actually had a conversation about it yesterday with someone where the customer asked whether they could actually switch account manager. But that's a whole different story. Yeah. I mean, has it also got to do with, is there an amount range in terms of the investment required? So for example, up to 250 euro or US a month?
What's always fun about this question is like, in theory, you think it would make sense like that. Like there's this like clear like line in the sand, like, hey, anything over like 5,000 per month or something like that is like, it's going to have to be sales led or something like that, where mm-hmm. you got to talk to somebody. But here's the thing where I always push back it. If you don't have good pricing, like you don't have a good pricing model, you don't have like really very clear value metrics where it's like, let's say you're an email marketing platform. It's like, you know how many people are paying like thousands of dollars per month for email marketing, yet it did start off with something that was like $50 per month and they never talked to somebody in sales. And so then I was like, well, is there a certain band here? Like, what does that look like? You think of like Paddle or Stripe. It's like, you know, you probably, if you're at scale, giving them a lot of revenue. And yet it's like, it never started with sales and stuff like that too. And so what really to reframe and re-ask it is like, it depends on what is your value metric. And so usually when you're making this transition from sales led to product led, one of the biggest things you got to go and think about is just, hey, what's our pricing model? So that it could be self-serve, so that somebody could start with, let's say, an affordable plan. And this could grow into something that's like, you know, $100,000 plus annual contract value. That would be fantastic. And yep. for many B2B SaaS companies, I would say it's possible to do that. However, where I see a lot of people make mistakes is they just have like, you know, free, and then it's like, you know, $10,000 per month, or like it's like this massive jump. And what you want it to be is, think of it like a ladder, like from one plan to the next. It's like the even steps are perfectly kind of weighted out. So it doesn't feel like, you're making a big jump leap of faith here. Because in a self-serve motion, you're going to have a lot less people being like, I'm not making that move, because they don't get to talk to anybody on that end to kind of reassure them it's going to be okay and everything.
Yeah, completely agree. I mean, I see those as well. It's sometimes hilarious. No, I mean, you're totally right. You know, it's about the friction. And I mean, how far can people really take it to just keep going? I mean, adding totally. A team, another team, another team. Is that then maybe, is the boundary maybe not the vendor and how the process is going, but more the customer's internal organization that says at some point from, oh, let's stop here. This is growing beyond what we expected. We need to get something properly in place. Whereby maybe you also have to kind of comply with certain security standards and so on.
Yeah. Well, like let's use Slack since it's a pretty familiar product for a lot of this. And so let's say a team, just one team in a big company starts adopting Slack. And then, you know, there's like the second team that starts adopting Slack, but they're in a different installation or something like that. And there's another team, they start growing. And then eventually they're like, shouldn't we all use the same one? That's kind of defeating the purpose of this. We're going to get a lot more. So it's like, what you should do if you're proactive about this is somebody at Slack headquarters notice that and say, hey, whether it's from all the same IPs, same like domains in the company emails, we got to find who is the right person to reach out to make this business case. And we got to go to the people that signed up on each of those accounts, just like CC them all in the same email and actually build more of a business case. Be like, hey, you know what? I know you all work at Dell.com, but like, yes, you have actually 8 different installations of Slack. You can actually save a lot more and get all the security features you need if we go down this route. Would you like to set up a call? And so it's like, it's accelerating it, but that's like your product-led sales motion where it's using the best of both worlds. It started self-serve, but then we're trying to accelerate this and grow it into just, yeah, that one big account.
Exactly. Going back to the 5 things that these companies that created successful PLG did differently. One question before that, like, what is an early decision that you have to worry about to succeed with PLG? What is maybe the most important one? You already mentioned pricing or monetization, or is there a different one?
Yeah, I would say like this goes back to one of the first steps too. And the reason why it's the first step is your strategy. Like, what is your strategy and like how you're going to win? It sounds so basic, but a lot of times I will have founders where they're like, yeah, okay, we're going to like kill our product-led growth motion. It's not working that well. But then I'm like, well, how are you planning on winning in your space? Like, you're in a very competitive space. And like, for instance, if you're in like a red ocean where like it's just commoditized and you also have a low price ticket, it's like, and you don't have the most efficient go-to-market motion, it's really hard unless you can differentiate in some way to stand out and get out of that commodity zone to more of a contender. And then eventually, hopefully you become on the cusp of the market. And then one day, maybe you could become the obvious choice. And so that's really where we start is like, what would it look like for us to become the obvious choice? What is that market? What does that look like? Where can we win? Where is our product best? Where is our team capabilities best lined up for us to capitalize on this? And so getting really clear on that oftentimes breaks down. Like, for instance, if we're talking about Canva, it's like, well, Canva has the big vision that like we want to empower anyone to design anything. So, you know, when it comes to how we're going to win, like our go-to-market motion, what makes sense there? And it's like, yeah, it has to be self-serve. It has to be really, really friggin' easy to use. Like, user experience has to be a moat. And so then it's just working backwards from that part. And it's like, that is not, we're not even calling it PLG. It's just, this is the business. This is how we're going to win. And we're very clear. We have conviction on this, that this is what we got to do. And that last piece, the word conviction, I say it like it's nothing, but it is, because you got to actually believe in this strategy of like, this is how we're going to win. And because the first 6-12 months of this probably won't be anything amazing. And you could probably get a lot farther with a sales-led motion many, many times, just because it is a lot more rickety to get a product-led motion working and getting started and than it is for a sales-led motion. At least that's my belief.
Yeah, maybe. Well, that's a question. Like, what is a myth that you actively want to go against? Because I mean, I hear a lot about that. PLG is easier. Well, I actually think it's way harder.
Yeah. Well, I think it's like the one quote I always say is like, you know, product-led growth, it's easier to scale, but it's harder to get started. Whereas like a sales-led company, it's easier to get started, especially get to like that first million, but it's a lot harder to scale because it's a lot more people-oriented and heavy on that end. And so, I think like that is the current myth where I'm like, just keep hammering on it. People realize, and it's like, okay, maybe, you know, 5 or 10 years with some of these AI tools, it will like the, you know, discrepancy will be mitigated a little bit, but right now it's still a lot harder.
Yeah. So talking about the 5 differences, I mean, I think you mentioned already a couple of them, right? Because it's yep. About conviction, commitment. So let's go through all 5 of them. First in rapid order.
Well, I got a little surprise for you. So there's the 5 that were different from the PLG book, but in total, there's 9 things. And as I can do like a high level overview of some of them, but I want you to like poke at some of these ones from the sales side of things too, because I think there's like a ton of overlap with this framework of what would be really helpful for whether you're a sales led or a product led company. So basically what this is a go-to-market operating system. So you can install it. You're always going to be updating this again and again. And so it all starts with the strategy piece we were talking about. Like, what is your winning strategy? The next thing you got to go through is who's your ideal user? So if you're a sales led company, just swap that out with like, who's your ideal buyer? And do you really know like, what does success look like for them? Do you know where do they get stuck in each stage of their user journey? Like from even just, I have a problem to like, I'm on your website. Where the hell is the demo button? Or where do I sign up? And like, you're asking way too many fields. All those challenges, like you document. Where do they get stuck? Where do they get stuck when it comes to getting value? So that's like step two. Step three is now that you know exactly like what success is for that ideal user, then the next part is, let's break that down. Like, what could we give them for free that would actually help them and be intentional? So one of the things I used to think of, I'm like, oh yeah, you just got to give people like free stuff. Maybe it's like a 14-day free trial or something like that. But when I did that and then it didn't work, I was like, well, why? There's got to be a little more strategy to this. And so when you're thinking about like, what do we give away for free? And this applies to any business, and even sales of businesses. I think some of the best ones, they have like killer content, and it's always talking about these specific things. And once you hear this, you'd be like, ah, this makes sense. So break down your business into like three buckets. You have like beginner problems for your ideal user, your ideal buyer. Then you have like these intermediate problems for your user and buyer, and then the advanced stuff. And so if you kind of have an outcome for each of those different levels, there's like level one, the beginner stuff. Level one is, this is, let's say for Canva, creating your first graphic as an example. Level two is like solving the immediate stuff, which might be adding another team member or something like that, where you could actually collaborate together. And so not saying that's what it is today, but as an example, now it's like, we could just break down. Okay, so in order for them to create that poster, what are all the challenges they're going to have to overcome? Everything. Writer's block, finding inspiration, designing cool stuff, and then just list all that out. And then once you go through, like, okay, what are the biggest challenges here? What are the solutions? And don't just think about this from a product perspective. I use what I call the PCR test. It's like product solutions. Like, what product solutions could solve those specific challenges? What content solutions could solve those? Because a lot of times, it's not even like the product stuff that holds people back. Like one of our clients, userguiding.com, it's really like an easy to use product adoption solution to kind of guide people from one point of the product to the other to get stuff done. But it's like, to do that and get a right strategy, gotta have the right content. So it's like, sure, that's a big piece of the product. And then the last piece is just the resources. Like, is there any other resources we could give them to support them in overcoming those challenges? And sometimes that's people. And that's just like one of our other clients, Powbox. They're HIPAA email compliance, and they're targeting mental health professionals that want to use like G Suite or Microsoft Outlook, but make it HIPAA compliant. And it's a beautifully simple product. Nothing changes like on as far as like what you got to use for email, but the setup sucks. So it's like they subsetted that with having the great support team, where it's like, we'll do it with you. Just give us the right login details and we'll do it all. And so there's some really fun things to be had when you're thinking about like, no, what do we give away for free? So that's a long-winded way of saying like, that's your foundation. Those first three things, your strategy, understanding your user and your model, are really the foundation of how you do this. And hopefully, even if you're a sales lead listening to this, you can see, if you apply the same approach, you could still get some really, really great content ideas, resource ideas of like, how do we better support people so that when they're ready to go to that intermediate challenge and overcome that outcome or that first paid plan, they're like, I'm sold. You've already been helping me so much. I just want help with this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of nodding on my end, but you can't see that on audio podcast. But yeah, it gets totally logical. But I think the main thing at the end is that this is much more than the product. Oh, like, really? You say, you have to completely organize your whole organization around it. And if you don't do that and just think, okay, I build a product, I put it on the website, people will come and buy it, it's not going to work for you. You have to think it through all the way. And like you said, I think the biggest component here is less friction, no friction. Where on the sales side, there can be friction. But I think it still follows the same pattern of things that are important, because at the end, you know, it's a customer problem that needs to be solved, and they don't know before or after whether product-led or sales-led is going to be the answer, because it doesn't matter. The problem needs to be solved. So talking about, you mentioned ideal user versus ideal buyer, ideal customer profile. How do you feel that is different or more nuanced for PLG versus other models, like, for example, sales-led?
Yeah, no, definitely. Like, I feel like in sales and models, they always refer to like, who's your ICP, ideal customer profile, and like the, whatever term you use, same thing, ideal buyer. I'm using them interchangeably, but it's just understanding like who is the person that's really going to make the decision on that buying side of things usually. And whereas the ideal user, the biggest difference here and why it's so much more pronounced in the product-led playbook is because that's the person that really matters when it comes to like the adoption of the product. They're the ones that are going to use it. Although, for instance, like if it's a marketing product, the VP of demand generation might be the one that actually like pays for it, but it's like, it's the digital marketing specialist that's actually using, you know, the social media campaigns, all that fun stuff. And so if you don't empower the user, the person who's going to find out about that product and bring it up, then it really doesn't work out that well, usually for product-led companies. Now, if you're in like the business to consumer space, sometimes the buyer and user are exactly the same person, like chess.com. Love it. It's like, I'm going to buy it, use it, same person. B2B is just a little bit more, you need that distinction.
Exactly. Yeah, true. For example, in the sales light, there's more layers at the end, you know, the user and then their boss, and then the layer on top of that, possibly procurement, legal, finance, even up to the CEO. I think that is a little bit less at PLG, but definitely not excluded. Talking about making an organization optimized for PLG, let's start on the side of the demand gen. How is the role of marketing different for a PLG company than, for example, for an SLG, a sales-led growth company? Because, of course, what I see at the end is that marketing is creating the demand and then it becomes a sale without sales involved. Does that require different things from a marketeer?
Yeah, I think like there's, if you think of like two circles, where's the overlap? Like there's definitely some things that stay the same. And then there's like other things that are completely different. And so I can talk about like, I mean, the same stuff is like, your goal is to get awareness. Your goal is to get like signups, whether those signups are like a free trial or that is somebody who wants to sign up for a demo. Like, so there's some core things that like, yes, otherwise they're all the same. But then the things that are different, we could talk a bit more about those, like your core offer is going to be different because you're focusing more on like getting people to sign up for free versus signing up for like a demo or something like that. So like that's not like groundbreaking, but like that's one example. Another thing that is really important for marketing to actually consider is what is like, is there any sort of growth loop that could be had in this business? So when you think about, hey, we're going to give this product away for free, and you know, only 3-5% of people might convert. Well, what could we do with those other 95-96% of people that are just using the product for free? Like, is there any awareness place? Do they share anything out? When I was working at Vidyard, like that was one of our biggest conversion tools, where it was like, hey, you share this video with somebody else, and we're going to optimize the hell out of that share page so that they learn like what is Vidyard. And sure, it's not like overly intrusive, but they're going to find out what we do. And that's the point. And that's a really great growth tip. So you're thinking about some things where it's like, what could we do on the product side of things to help get more signups? And so that's really important. Another thing we at least focus on at Product Led, not saying every marketing team does this, but we really focus on driving ideal users. So whoever you decide like is that ideal user, we actually usually embed or recommend embedding at least 2-4 questions as soon as they sign up to one, identify like who is an ideal user or not. It could be maybe company size. It could be something as simple as like what role are you or what are you trying to do within this product? But that serves a dual function of also accelerating the level of support we're going to give them and also what they need to do in that product. And so, yeah, that's, I think, like a high level thing, what's different, but there is different capabilities that I think are worth noting, like product marketing. Just by nature, if you kind of compare a sales-led company website versus a product-led one, usually the product-led ones are better. And I don't say that, like, maybe you can totally disagree, but like on a sales-led website, like there's a lot of things that that salesperson is going to say in that conversation to kind of like check the boxes and help that person build a ton of trust that like this is going to solve the problem for them. But in a product company, it's like, it all has to be there. It's got to be transparent and everything. And so that's really important for them to go through and build a capability around.
Yeah, I think a lot of sales-led companies can learn a lot from product-led, and I think their website would be better and conversion would be better, driving also better sales conversations. There's too much hidden, and like you say, it's not transparent enough. Talking about the ideal user then, recently I had a CEO on my podcast running a PLG company, no, actually running both, who also said it's so much harder in PLG to guide that ICP to buy from you because I mean they can sign up with a credit card and then they're a customer. So if you end up with 10% or 20% churn, you typically stay with that for a longer time. Where in sales-led, of course, there is this extra hurdle that people need to go through and you can qualify in and qualify out, but that's the decision then.
Yeah.
So how do you go about it? I mean, you already mentioned that you ask a couple of questions, but then, of course, that's typically already after the fact. Would you then still recommend stopping them here, like it's not for you, or just figure out, okay, maybe they'll stay, but if they don't stay, we can optimize the language and be more clear about optimal versus not optimal user?
Yeah, and this is really where it comes down to like picking at least like one ideal user. And then whenever you go craft that offer, it has to speak to that specific person. So one kind of fun case study is working with Pedro Cortez, which if anybody wants to like get their email or not email, but like homepage rewritten, he's awesome. But the main kind of thing he was working on with this one client was like, he's like, yeah, that conversion rate from like, you know, sign up to like get the free trial did not really improve, but the churn, it went like through the roof down. So like the reduced churn by 30% just by speaking to like, hey, the ideal users, if this is you, like for instance, if you're a SaaS founder, this is exactly what you need. This is the right product for you. And so everybody else is like, it's not really speaking to me, but it brought in the right people. And so a lot of times I see this again and again when it comes to churn, there's the people thinking about like, okay, we got to like solve this from like the more reactive side, like what can we do on customer success to solve this? But a lot of times it's like, it's a marketing problem. Like you're doing this to yourself. You're shooting yourself in the foot again and again by not being specific enough about who do you serve best? What problems do you solve? And so, I love starting it from like the acquisition side of things, if possible.
Completely agree. It's the greedy part of businesses. Like, need to have a big TAM. We can actually serve everybody. Question is, of course, whether you're going to be happy after the fact. two, maybe three more questions here. So there's this enormous wave, of course, and there's, I mean, I've been in the business long enough to kind of have seen other waves as well, but at the moment it's generative AI, of course. So how do you see AI and other emerging technologies impacting the effectiveness of PLG versus sales-led approaches in the near future?
Yeah, I mean, I think both approaches, whether it's sales or product-led, it's all going to get benefited from AI. It just makes us all more efficient. But I think a lot of product-led companies will benefit because when you think about like you're just dealing with the volume of users, like for let's say like use ClickUp as an example. I was just talking with one of the founders and they're like, they have a ton of signups, but imagine like if we could ask them like, what are you trying to solve here? And we could just set that up for you. There's no more, hey, you set things up. It's just going to be the AI's like, yeah, here's a few questions. Boom, 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 boom. Done. Here you go. Here's your installation. We set that project up. We've notified everybody on the team. Like they're also all set up. And so things will be that are right now really hard to get like people to value will become a lot easier. And like I've signed up for some products already where I'm like, they're asking some really interesting questions at the beginning and then boom, it's like, it's done for you. I think that's what we all want at the end of the day is we want to sign up for a product and it just for us to be done with it, like right off the bat. One analogy I shared in the first product-led growth book, I don't know if you remember, but it was the former CPO at grow.com. He's like, you know, here's the biggest problem in our business right now is, you know, we say like, hey, get your like free, or not free, but like $5 plate of spaghetti. And like people are like, I want that spaghetti. And then they like get to the restaurant and then they see the hostess like, hi, nice to meet you. They're like, great, so glad you're here. And they take them to the kitchen to make it. They're like, huh? They're like, what is this? And it's like, that's basically a lot of SaaS companies. It's like, here's the offer. you're resonating with it, right? And then it's like, here's the kitchen, DIY it yourself, do it yourself. And so it's like, but what people really want is they want that great deal. And they just wanted to like show up and be like, hey, okay, here's my spaghetti on, you know, within a minute, please, that'd be great. True. And great deal.
Yeah, another great example of getting the friction out of the whole process. And I think any motion will benefit from that. So how do you see the relationship between PLG and sales-led transforming? Because, I mean, there's a group that says, okay, it's only PLG. There's a group that says it's only sales-led. Will there be convergence for everybody in the future? Or maybe that's like too broad. But, I mean, how will it evolve, do you think, the relationship between them?
Yeah, I think there will still always be businesses where it's just sales led and just product led. There's always going to be a space for that. Like if you think like super enterprise, yes, yeah. There's going to be like pure reasons where it should just be that way. Like selling to governments and some other things makes perfect sense. But then when you think about product led, like there is some areas which are just going to be so standardized. Like I think about maybe it's not the best example, but like even like G Suite, something like that. It's like for the vast majority of people, it's going to be just you sign up, you get started whenever your business goes, and then you're fine. But then what I do think for the majority of people, it's going to look more like the hybrid. And so when I was writing the product-led playbook, I got some fun data on this, which was just the fact that right now, like we looked at 568 SaaS websites, 50% of them are still like demo sales led. So that's the majority. And about 28% of them are hybrid. So they have like both a sales led and product led motion in play. And then the other like 22% is the just pure product led. So I feel like if I was to be a betting man, what it might look like is in the future, it's like, hey, it's 22% just sales led. It's the well over the 50% is like the hybrid. And the remaining is like, that's just the product led. And so you have like the, you know, 20-20 at both ends, and the majority 60% is just we use both and we get the best of both worlds. And so, yeah, that's what I see at least.
This, well, I mean, I see the same. And I think there's also a healthy evolution. I mean, I come from the ERP world, and I even think that part of ERP can be sold as PLG, specifically also now with the new capabilities you just talked about. Last question then. From the lessons that you've learned, what would be a do and what would be a don't to consider for any SaaS CEO that wants to get more a self-serve mode part of the business?
Yeah, I sound like a broken record, but do get very clear on your winning strategy. Like what does that look like? How are you going to win and dominate your specific market? That should open up and give you a lot more clarity of what that looks like. For the don't piece, there's so many things. That's the thing. But I think the biggest thing is understand there's an order to this. So don't just go firing from the hip and be like, hey, you know, let's start with onboarding. Let's start with like our offer. But there is like back to those 9 steps. There is actually an order you could go through that and see success with that. So yeah, don't just wing it.
Exactly. Well, we can still talk about this for hours. And I would recommend people to read both your books, because the one is more about, okay, what is it? And is it something for me? And the second is about how to do it. Where can people go to find out more about your book or to say hi to you?
Yeah. So if anybody wants to find out more about what I'm up to, productled.com is a great place. Also, like you on LinkedIn, very active. I try and post every day as well. So does Wes Bush. And I have a special gift. Like if anybody found this conversation useful, like going through a bit of the product-led playbook, that's what we do. We give away free gifts at product-led. So if you go to productledgift.com, we're giving you the entire audiobook of the product-led playbook for free. So just wanted to give that as a gift to the people who stayed till the end, because you're the special people that listen and finish things.
Thank you very much. I like the gift. I think I'm going to steal that. But thanks for the wisdom. So much to kind of further unpack, but I think we've covered on a couple of very, very meaty problems. Thank you. I'll keep following you.
Yes, likewise. And thanks so much, Don. This is great.
It's been a pleasure. And this ends my conversation with Wes, and I hope you enjoyed it. And if so, please leave a review on iTunes. And if it inspired you, please share it with other tech entrepreneurs on a mission that you have in your network. Other than that, thank you for tuning into this podcast. I had the honor to speak to Wes Bush, product-led growth pioneer, founder of productled.com, and best-selling author. As said, the goal that I have in this podcast is twofold. Firstly, to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. And secondly, share experiences from tech entrepreneurs like you about what is required to create a remarkable software business and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so. Before I close, I have two more comments to make. If you know other tech entrepreneurs on a mission that have a story worth sharing, please send me an email at ton.dobby@valueinspiration.com. Building the momentum all starts with revealing the ideas, and that starts with you. And if you want to know more about my book, or you're interested in joining the Remarkable Effect tribe, please visit my website at www.valueinspiration.com. Thanks for tuning in. And you could do me a big favor by rating the podcast on iTunes or provide me with your feedback directly. I'll see you shortly on a new episode.